The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valenti and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. One of those challenging mornings for many. Not nearly the accumulations that we've certainly heard over the weekend. It started on Black Friday, lake effect snow to the north, places like Erie and anywhere along the Great Lakes from Michigan stretching over to New York. But we will have the potential for lake effect snow just to the north, basically from the I-80 corridor up toward the Great Lakes over the next 36 hours, actually. And we're going to check in with the National Weather Service here next hour about the warnings and the watches. That does not include Allegheny County and the city of Pittsburgh. We basically, as far as snowfall totals, Paul, got what we got overnight.
I think you're right. Wanted to say thanks again to Ellen Gamble for calling our attention to the fact that the work on the McKees Rocks Bridge that was going to start today around 9 a.m. has been postponed due to the weather.
And also, our 100.1 FM signal restored. We had some issues due to the high winds and power outages, but we're good to go. And joining us is the public safety reporter with the Post-Gazette, Laura Esposito. Laura, good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
So your job, obviously, reporting around the region about safety issues, it becomes more challenging on a day like this where you have high winds, so anything wet with dropping temperatures can glaze things over, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, these projects that happen, whether it be road projects or when public safety issues arise, can often be postponed with inclement weather.
I know this issue, obviously, with the missing woman, Elizabeth Pollard, that occurred Monday night, Unity Township in Westmoreland County. It would be hard to know that there would be a sinkhole developed over an old mine shaft, and they've turned what they hoped was a rescue operation into a recovery mission. Anything to add to that? Because a lot of people are wondering, how could this happen?
Yeah. So state troopers announced last night in the evening that what they hoped was a search and rescue mission would now become a recovery mission. They said they were still holding out for a glimmer of hope, but, you know, it was a very, very emotional time at the site of that sinkhole for both the family and for the law enforcement, who repeatedly just kept saying, it feels like we failed. State Trooper Steve Lamani said that it was the most intricate and complex rescue he's seen in his 26-year career because of this abandoned mine that spans for miles underneath Marguerite Road in Unity Township. Right now, it's an ongoing effort to still recover Ms. Pollard and do right by her family. But at the same time, there is cause for concern because there's several other areas where the abandoned mine stands that have now been deemed unsafe, that have now been deemed, this could have happened in other places as well, was the sentiment that was being expressed. And, you know, all across Pennsylvania, we are have a lot of areas with these types of abandoned mines, which pose a really big public safety issue.
Yeah, we've seen this because of the extent of mining in the region. There are many areas where this is a potential issue, but how would you know?
You know, unfortunately, oftentimes you don't. So with the situation in Marguerite, a sinkhole actually appeared above the site of the Marguerite mine in Unity Township, you know, before. And this is something that, you know, we have the Bureau of Mine. It falls under the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protections. They have said that they are looking into this issue. But with the vast amount of mines throughout Pennsylvania, it's difficult. And unfortunately, it's more reactionary than preventative at times.
Yeah, in this case, we understand Ms. Pollard had a five-year-old granddaughter in a car that fortunately shaken up, but not injured and safe. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine what this family's going through.
So state police had spoke with the family last night. They said that the family understands why the mission has shifted and that they get it, but it was just, you know, obviously emotional, and there hasn't been any reported signs of life, and there's been no news. So her car was found right near the scene, right near the sinkhole, with her five-year-old granddaughter inside, and her family has been on site most days while these crews have been working. But I mean, it really has been incredible the way the community has pulled together for that family. You know, there's been a restaurant set up right near the side of the sinkhole that's just been operating around the clock, providing food for first responders. And, you know, something that really struck me was I don't think people truly understand the scope of how dangerous going into that sinkhole was, you know, in general. They had to stop sending human crews out there once the roof of the abandoned mine, they believed that it had collapsed. Early yesterday. And before that, though, it was, you know, a lot of first responders are risking their lives, and a lot of people were doing, you know, the community was really coming together to try and find Ms. Pollard, and that work doesn't stop. You know, the inclement weather definitely does hinder efforts, but that work will continue, and I'm confident that they're not going to stop until they find her.
Well, we appreciate the update, Laura. Thank you. And hopefully we can talk again about some other issues of safety that aren't quite as tragic as this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Laura Esposito, read all about it in the Post-Gazette. She writes about public safety for the paper. And I know, Paul, earlier we heard from State Trooper Lamani, and you could tell the emotion in his voice, and he put it properly. He said, this has been really difficult for them, but not nearly, and understanding the family, obviously, and friends, how tragic.
You've got that many people, I mean dozens, more than 100 at one point, doing everything they could to try and find this person. And when you put in that kind of an effort in those conditions and under that kind of pressure, you're going to have a reaction. I mean, I don't know how they handle all that they handle in law enforcement, but you could even see, just looking at Steve Lamani's face during news conferences, with the sound off on a television, as we do in the newsroom, you could just see how stressed out and worried and concerned he was.
Emotionally invested and yet very professional. So they are continuing their issues there in Unity Township, Westmoreland County, of trying to recover Elizabeth Pollard. And if you have an issue you want to share with us, we're happy to hear from you. Or you can go to our instant access at kdkradio.com, send a email note. And that said, let's get a power outage update. Paul, you've been working on this. You've been really good about keeping us updated. At one point, what was our high in terms of customers, households without power? It was around 20,000.
Yeah, 17,000 when we got started this morning. And they're down to just under 12,000. And again, the vast majority of these outages are in the city of Pittsburgh itself, like 9,700 of them. The next largest number would be New Kent, 634, Allison Park, 359, West Mifflin down to 316, and the list is quite lengthy. I mean, it goes all the way down to Plum, where they've got one.
That's it? Just one?
Yep. But this is this new Duquesne Light Power Outages map, and it's really, once you get used to it, it's very detailed.
And pretty comprehensive.
And up to the minute, too.
Well, we all remember the days when your power would go out, you'd have to call your utility company, and if you got a human being and reported it, you know, it was a challenge. But now with technology, they're able to really pinpoint exact locations. And Pittsburgh Public Schools operating on a normal schedule today. North Allegheny, the second largest school district, 2-hour delay. North Seneca Valley, 2-hour delay, as is Mars. You can get the complete list, kdkradio.com. Some other stories making news. Cheat cheese, you mentioned to me, which it's interesting this has come up after 20 years. I remember there was a Cheat Cheese restaurant on McKnight Road. And
I know which one you're talking about. Exactly. You could tell by looking at the building it was a Cheat Cheese.
Yes. And I was actually there the day they opened. They did a promotion way back, but they closed because they had a major issue.
They did have a major issue. Back in the day, they had a food poisoning problem. I guess it was like a hepatitis A outbreak. It was, I can't recall, I think it was the Center Township Cheat Cheese location up in Beaver County. Is that right? Or Butler County?
Yes.
Yeah, Butler. Anyway, so the headlines yesterday were saying that Cheat Cheese might be coming back. Well, I learned some interesting facts about this that I didn't know before. The trademark is owned by Hormel Foods, and that's why you see Cheat Cheese salsa and other products available in grocery stores, is because they're manufactured by Hormel, but they use the branding for Cheat Cheese. And what they're doing is they're selling the trademark for use at restaurants to Michael McDermott. Well, who's he? He's the son of the chain's co-founder, Marno McDermott, and his partner was Green Bay Packers player Max McGee.
Good Lord.
They opened their first one in Minnesota, and then, as everyone knows, they closed. Then Outback Steakhouse bought the Cheat Cheese chain, which was going under. And the reason why they did that was they were buying the locations. They weren't buying the restaurants. They were buying the building so they can convert them into like Outback or Bonefish Grill. So McDermott is going to revive Cheat Cheese. And there's no telling, you know, where it's going to go and how soon he's going to open. But out of curiosity, Larry, I entered a search and said old Cheat Cheese menu. Because I remember going to a Cheat Cheese for the first time and being kind of fired up. Where I was living, there was no Mexican food to speak of.
Well, there weren't really hardly any here in Pittsburgh until they came. And now there's a proliferation of Mexican restaurants around the region.
So guess what the menu has on it? There's like 1/3 of the menu is just mainly the entrees. At the very top, 6 combination Mexican dishes, and everything else underneath it is not Mexican food. Burgers, steaks, chicken, seafood, right?
I don't recall that.
And you can order a la carte Mexican items, but they were really structured, and I think smartly, in markets like Pittsburgh, where people are a little bit leery about eating food that might be too hot. There's something else on the menu for everyone.
So they might be coming back.
And they were selling atmosphere, too, as well. I don't know if you remember the atmosphere, but it was very different for a restaurant at that time.
Yeah, now there's a Mexican restaurant in every town, every little nook and cranny.
Yeah,
I remember there was a place where East Street Valley, before 279 was built, if you can imagine this, McKnight Road continued right through that valley, through residential, and there were some commercial businesses. One was a place called the Casa Loma, which had a neon sign, and it was a bar restaurant as you got into the valley. The Casa Loma.
See, now where I was growing up, we had Mexican all over the place. And in the U.S. West, that was the case. But back in the day, getting Mexican food anywhere was an experience.
To that end, Casa Loma was the only Mexican restaurant. I don't even know if it was Mexican. I never was in there, but they said it was a popular haunt for many. How about the Pope getting the electric Pope Mobile? The Pope is moving into the future. Mercedes-Benz announced it's created the first ever electric Pope Mobile. The company's been supplying the Vatican with cars for over 100 years.
Yeah, I wonder if they have like a deal of some kind with the Vatican.
Yeah, they get a ticket to heaven or two.
But it's always been a Mercedes, the Pope Mobile.
Yeah, so the Pope Mobile will be totally emissions free, have a swivel seat for the Pope that's heated, by the way, and 2 passenger seats behind him. They will deliver it in time for the 2025 Jubilee. And of course, it is all white. Pope's going electric. I remember when they showed the Pope's first tweet Do you remember that?
Oh, it was yes. Like Pontifex, remember?
He was just about to hit, you know, the send button.
Wasn't that Pope Benedict, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was. Thursday at this time, we check in with the good doctor, Mike Hutchinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. You can see the doc on the radio via our video stream at kdkradio.com. No fire in your fireplace, Doc, this morning.
No, but we have the snow on the ground, and I guess it's still coming down all day.
Yeah, you're in the north, so how many inches of snow did you end up getting overnight?
So far, about 3, 3.5, not much, but
there's a chance
it's still snowing.
Some additional lake effect, yeah, through the day, especially in northern Butler County, anywhere from I-82 headed to the north. That said, the first question is from Stephen Chadyson and has something to do with the cold weather. He's noticed that their family dog, 13 years old, seems to be experiencing more stiffness getting up. Tell us about it. Probably from arthritis. Is it possible that the colder weather is making his condition worse, and what can we do about it?
Yeah, that's likely, and that happens a lot during this time of year. For us, too, just like you said, Larry, tell us about it. But it's what can you do? You can get a nice orthopedic mattress if your dog likes a dog bed. They have great ones with memory foam, things that make them very comfortable when they lay down, helps their joints. It, you know, we have a lot of things we can do as far as joint supplements. Dasaquin is a good one. Cosquin is a good one. If you end up needing some medical care, your veterinarian may prescribe some anti-inflammatory drugs or even laser therapy. Class 4 laser therapy is very good for sore joints in dogs, and they can get a tune-up every now and then, and it really helps them along. And then we have more advanced therapies like stem cell therapy for bad joints, for bad arthritis, if it's not just temporary, and those kinds of things you can explore with your veterinarian.
And, Doc, I heard a comedian saying, Paul, you'll get a kick out of this. He goes, you know you've reached a certain age when you go to bed and somehow wake up injured.
That's what we talk about all day.
Right. All right, Paul.
I don't even know what I did. I just laid down.
Right. What happened? Meanwhile, Paul, let him have it.
Now, just tell me about it. I had an ice pack on my left hip this morning before I came to work. Jeff in West Mifflin, Dr. Mike, says he wants to know, is it safe to adjust his pet's diet in the winter to account for less activity?
You know, I think that's a fantastic idea. And that's somebody that cares about that winter, you know, 10%, 15% that a lot of dogs and cats put on because of less activity. So if you can't increase the activity indoors, then what you have to do is cut that diet down. And I do recommend taking whatever you feed during the day, cut 10% of that back or 15%, depending on what your veterinarian tells you. And that is a great idea. Now, if you have an outdoor dog, they need more calories to stay warm. So outdoor dogs, we want to give them a little extra layer of fat. So I recommend if the dog is outdoors that you increase their food intake during the winter to help them keep warm. So it's a little opposite, but you get it. They have to stay warm. Make sure they're off the ground in a good doghouse, out of moisture. Put, you know, stacks of hay around it if you can. And make sure they can get out of the wind, that they can go inside that doghouse and get out of that wind and stay draft-free.
And Wendy in Bloomfield wants to know, what are the signs of frostbite in pets? This is a great question. And what should I do if I suspect that my pet has gotten frostbite?
Yeah, frostbite's a bad thing in pets. It's usually the tips of their ears, the tips of their tail, and their paws. And people don't expect the paws, but we have to be very careful in this crazy weather. I recommend little booties for the pets if you're going for long walks and there's snow and salt out there just to protect them. But what it looks like is the skin looks pale, sometimes grayish, brownish. And then as the skin dies, it gets black and then it starts to peel. So if you suspect your dog might have gotten frostbite, you want to warm them up, maybe a warm blanket, maybe warm compresses, not hot. And you don't want to rub it because that's painful. You just want to support them and then get them to your veterinarian. We had a dog near us that got caught in a trap, if you can imagine, a beagle, and it got frostbite. Luckily, we were able to save the paw with multiple laser therapies, getting the circulation back. And when I first looked at that, I didn't think it was going to be possible. So there are things that we can do for it, but you want to get it to the vet right away. And better yet, protect them from that. Don't leave them outside in that real cold weather very long. Watch your pet carefully during this kind of weather.
Paul, any further questions, doctor?
I'm good. I was listening carefully to what he was talking about outdoor dogs. I didn't realize that. I don't know how many people still have outdoor dogs. It surprised me to hear that there are any.
Yeah, I see them occasionally, Paul. We'll, you know, be driving. I live out in the country, so I see it more often. But they do a good job. I mean, you know, the people around here, I see they do a good job with their dogs. They have very good houses. Those dogs are happy. They're out wagging their tail during the day. They have plenty of fresh water. That's another key thing. And the cold weather, you have to make sure that water doesn't freeze up. You have to check that often, make sure they didn't tip it over. And a lot of people provide pretty well for that. I don't get it anymore. I think dogs, we bring them into our homes, but it's a those dogs you have to be the most careful with, because they're outside in that weather. But you watch some of these huskies, I mean, they almost prefer it. We had a dog, a long-haired dog, when I grew up that preferred, you know, he had a beautiful dog house, if you will, and he would go out into the pen and lay down on the cold concrete all day.
Yeah, they love that. And you know our dog very well. She's around 13. I'm not exactly sure because we rescued her, but here's a question for you. All of a sudden this year, Doc, suddenly she doesn't want to go on the grass. She wants to go on the walkway or the driveway. And it seems like we can't explain it or discourage it.
Yeah, no, I get it. And sometimes it's just that feel. They go out into the grass and it's frozen. You know, we have a short-haired dog that acts like that, goes out all of a sudden, starts picking up the feet like it's lame. Then it comes inside and runs around like a nut. Mm-hmm. Just doesn't like the feel out there. And you have to coax her to go out there. So, no, I get it. I see dogs doing that as they get older. They just don't like that feel. And they change where they're going to go to the bathroom. It's a little bit easier for them.
You know, Dr. Mike, I had a dog walker who walked my Ginger, who said it was a fact for him that dogs hate walking on crunchy snow.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. They generally don't like it. And then I have this long-haired shepherd who thinks that he belongs outdoors all the time in this weather, constantly ringing the bell, not to go to the bathroom, but to go out and play in the snow.
It was a little more disturbing when we saw the neighbor doing the same thing on the sidewalk. But meanwhile, check out Dr. Mike Hutchinson at animalgeneral.net. Doc, always good to see you, and we'll see you next Thursday.
All right. Sounds great. Have a great day. Stay warm, everyone.
You got it. Dr. Mike, look forward to our visits every week.
He's an awesome vet.
Download the free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take us with you wherever you go. We'll keep you posted. I always joke, Paul, I don't know what you paid for a transistor radio when you were a kid, but it was a pittance, right, with the batteries. And I used to listen at night to the radio stations you could hear around the country, including KDKA.
Of course.
And, you know, I had a little earphone jack, and I guess that's where I kind of got enamored with radio in the first place. I always thought it was amazing. And you create, especially when it was sports like baseball, you have to create the images that the announcers are, you know, trying to explain, painting a picture with your tongue.
Right. The first time I heard a distant radio station with a brand new transistor radio I got for Christmas, the first one I heard was KFI in Los Angeles, all the way up in Montana.
Yeah, and I interviewed, remember, anchorman Tom Brokaw, NBC Nightly News.
South Dakota boy.
Yeah, he said, when I got him on the air, he said, Larry, when I was on my grandfather's farm in Iowa, we used to listen to the Crystal set on KDKA. Anyway, I wanted to update a story that you and I talked about this week about asteroids. And it's interesting how it was reported as a giant asteroid might hit the Earth, and then someone said a little asteroid. Here's correspondent from CBS, Mike Wallace.
NASA tracked an asteroid about 39 feet in diameter as it passed Earth at a distance of 207,000 miles, closer than the moon. Don't worry, though, it didn't pose a threat. In fact, NASA says no known asteroids will pose a risk of impact with Earth over the next 100 years. Most asteroids in our solar system are found in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter, but they can be disturbed once in a while and come a little closer. An asteroid the size of the Empire State Building will come within 1.4 million miles of Earth next week. Michael Wallace, CBS News.
So that is a giant asteroid if it's the size of the Empire State Building, but 1.4 million miles. Right. Yeah. But the reporting on it.
I guess we can relax after reading the reports, right?
That was my point, is of all the things you have to be concerned with today, don't worry about asteroids.